Yeah, I've just got one of the Logitech cameras and it's fine.
Yeah, mine's really old. It's 720. It doesn't work in the dark, but I don't know. It's
you look fine. I mean, it's good enough for work.
Is it good enough for Zoom, you think? I got to do a Zoom interview tomorrow.
Yeah, you look fine.
For a job I don't want.
Oh, that's right. You were thinking about taking some time off, but they just pulled you back in.
Dude, once you're like, you know what? I don't want a job anymore. You start getting calls for jobs.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
It's just how it works, dude. And they're just like, they're not good enough to be excited about, but they're good enough where you're like, I can't just say no.
Yeah.
So I got to have to talk to them and then, you know, but I'm going to be clear. I'll be like, look, whatever the deal is like, I'm planning on leaving for an extended trip, in the late winter. So you still heading out there? You still got plans?
No, I canceled, the New Year's trip. I'm going to go out in the springtime.
In the spring?
I've just been probably like, I don't know, March, something like that.
Yeah.
March, April. Like, I've just been traveling a little too much and getting kind of frazzled around the edges and spending way too much money. Cause
I'm the opposite. I've not been traveling enough and haven't spent much money at all. I gotta change that.
There you go. Switch it up.
All right. So we're all talking about what? All this, what's going on with the markets and shit. We don't have our market boy here, but I guess it's just the two of us. He's busy doing real shit.
He's busy doing real life stuff. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. This sort of like interstitial period between election and inauguration is, shit is just going crazy in the financial markets and other stuff. So
stocks are pumping. Gold is dropping
because from what I can gather, you know, gold investors are A, taking profits, and B, like the risk of World War III has gone down.
Yeah.
So I guess people are like a little bit off of the gold trade and, you know, I don't think the, from what I can tell, it sounds like the bond market is,
it's dipping.
Yeah, it's a little skeptical of how all this is going to work.
And then let's cut through the crap. Let's talk about what you want to talk about. Bitcoin's ripping. Almost $90,000 today. It's getting to that $100,000 mark. That's a big psychological barrier. Yeah.
Well,
it
wicked up past 90 grand and then it's been like chopping. It found like a new chop zone. Mm. So it's going to, I think it's going to chop here for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Anything crazy is going to happen before Thanksgiving.
You think something's crazy is going to happen? You think it's going to march to a million?
I don't know about a million, but
that's what everyone's hoping for.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, the general consensus among the people who pay attention to this stuff is that 100K is, you know, it's basically in the bag if nothing bad happens.
Mm-hmm.
And if they announce,
it's only like a 12-point move. To 100K. It's not even a big move to 100K.
Like the chop zone is like 87 to 90 right now, right? Mm-hmm. So 12, 13 points.
Yeah.
Or 1,000. And then, somebody is like, if you just look at the chart, somebody is just aggressively selling at 90. So whether it's futures or options or whatever, somebody is like, I don't think anyone, somebody big doesn't want it to go above 90 in the short run.
Yeah.
Cause I don't think it's just like a bunch of retail people shorting at 90. I don't think that's how it works.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think so either. Yeah.
Yeah. You would know better than me, but I mean,
nobody seems to really know anything.
Yeah.
About
nobody fucking knows. Right. Nobody knows.
It's a strange thing. You think how big of a effect does the ETF have right now on the Bitcoin price? Wait, hold on. Okay. Sorry. Sorry, my mic cut out. Our mics cut out. Both our mics cut out for a while. It's been a while since we were talking about the thing we were talking about. But we were talking about these ETF flows and whether into Bitcoin and whether you think ETFs are like affecting the price. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of money coming in. But is our ETF inflows and trading of ETF actually making a material impact on Bitcoin price, you think?
So there's a couple of people who work for Bloomberg who track this stuff pretty closely. Eric Balchunas and James Seifert. And this is like almost their full-time job to look at this shit, right? Because they cover all sorts of ETFs, you know, leveraged ETFs, options, wrapped ETFs, short ETFs. Like they do all the coverage on all of the ETFs in the market, and they spend an inordinate amount of time covering the Bitcoin ETF complex. And it's just inconclusive. Like, nobody really knows, right? Because there's so much volume traded on offshore derivatives exchanges, that like nobody really knows if the back end of the US ETF complex, which is basically like all the big investment banks and Coinbase and, you know, like custodians like BNY, if it actually makes a difference. And, you know, presumably those ETF backend banks have to like go to OTC desks and wherever, God knows where else, to get their underlying.
Let me ask you this. So when we see the Bitcoin official price, who's printing that price? Because if there's multiple exchanges all over the world, and there's no really like regulated coin market, then how do we, like, is that price actually indicative of a global Bitcoin price, or are there multiple prices at any given time?
So I think just like any other commodity, like whatever you can get on an OTC desk does not necessarily track with the quoted public price, right? Like if you buy in volume, you can get whatever fucking deal you can get. So that's one thing. And then
what is that price then? Like, where's that coming from?
What most people do is, like, if you're on TradingView or whatever, like, they're just using the quoted exchange price on something like Coinbase or Kraken or whatever, right?
So
those prices are the offered prices at the exchange. But nobody, like, I don't know how the market making works in that situation.
Like, there could be large volumes of Bitcoin exchanges that are quite far away from the
yeah,
price,
for sure.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think...
Because, like, with stocks, it's different because we have, like, a whole...
It's all centralized.
Regulated best price, best bidder... We call it the best bidder offer.
Yeah.
And, like, you're owed, basically, like, the best available printed price. It's got to be publicly... It's got to hit the public tape. But Bitcoin ain't like that.
Bitcoin's not like that. I'm not a market structure expert by any stretch of the imagination. I don't fucking know what's going on.
But it sounds like even the market structure experts don't know because they're...
Yeah, nobody really knows, right?
Yeah.
And you've got to imagine that there's hedge funds out there that just have their tentacles into like a dozen different exchanges and are just constantly arbing the difference, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it organically kind of settles onto a quoted price that happens to line up among the exchanges. But I mean, even today, like during crazy price swings, like when huge traders get liquidated, either up or down, like there's discrepancies in the price between different exchanges. So,
yeah.
So and those like huge wicks that you see every once in a while, like nobody really knows, like is, you know, are they just looking at order book quotes or like the quoted quotes or like what you know, nobody really knows what's going on. So nobody really knows.
You're talking about these huge wicks. You're talking about big changes in the price.
Like, yeah, like yeah. Because there's so much derivatives.
Some of the candlesticks.
Yeah, like the huge candlestick wicks that go down by like $10,000 and then immediately just get bought up or sold. Like.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows what that actually
is.
Yeah. Like, what is that? Like, who the fuck knows? I think this happened. It happened more in like the FTX days, where a lot of this shit was just bogus to begin with.
Yeah.
But these days, it's much more. It's not really domestically regulated, right? So like nobody really knows. But it's much more like.
I think that's what the ETF thing did for it. Is it turned it into a stock, and now that the ETF trades under in a regulated market, that it gives the appearance of it being regulated. It gives it the appearance of a regularly traded security, but it's not. It's just a tracker, right? So
There's a bunch of domestic stuff that has enough data for the authorities, the regulatory authorities, to like feel comfortable with it. So there's, you know, like all the CME stuff, and you know, options are about to get approved for trading probably sometime in Q1 25, and like the Coinbase quotes and, you know, all the other domestic exchange quotes. Like, I think part of the process of getting the ETF approved was the regulatory authorities looking at all this historical data and just like seeing if there's any fuckery out there. And I think after FTX went down and all the other like fraudulent companies, basically, it probably improved to the point where even with Gary Gensler in the SEC, they like approved it, you know, like it's trading right now. So
which people mistook as an imprimatur of the government's basically like acceptance of Bitcoin as a safe and stable asset.
Yeah, I think it's more like
was a mistake, but.
Well, you know. I think it was more like the government couldn't do anything to really stop it. They just didn't have that power.
But what I'm saying is that they don't need to stop it. I think that they should have avoided giving a tacit endorsement of it because they were doing
the SEC.
Oh yeah. The SEC is in this like eternal sort of rivalry with the CFTC. They're kind of set up that way. And they want to like compete for jurisdiction over this thing, 'cause they know it's big.
Yeah.
And so they've been, you know, there's this debate as to whether Bitcoin is a commodity, like a currency,
right,
or whether it's a security. And yeah. So the ETF was a way for the SEC to sort of take the, 'cause the ETF clearly is going to be subject to a security. The ETF is a security. So they went about the ETF way to sort of
like the actual ETF wrapper itself.
Yeah, the ETF wrapper is definitely security.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And so they did that to sort of like backdoor their way into
regulating it.
Regulation of Bitcoin. Because they all want to look, man. It's the thing with government is like it's just careerist shit. Like it's just an agency that wants to be relevant.
Everyone's trying to pad their resume.
Yeah, you know, and there were so many people, I remember, like, this has been going on for like a decade. So many people in finance who are bored of their stodgy jobs and looking with a jealous eye towards Silicon Valley still think that crypto was sort of like this way to sort of like tunnel your way from like a boring finance career into like an exciting tech career.
Well, that's the thesis behind MicroStrategy, right? Like they're floating bond offerings into the corporate bond finance market, which is like the most boring shit you could possibly imagine in finance, right?
Exactly.
And they're doing convertible offerings so that these like, you know, guys who trade bonds all day can like get in on not just equity action but Bitcoin action too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
they're becoming a Rick that just, it's kind of like when Yahoo was basically a surrogate for Alibaba.
Yeah, right. Because of their cross international ownership, right?
Because they own so much. They eventually just spun it off, and Yahoo just became like basically an Alibaba trust, and they re-registered themselves as a mutual fund, basically.
So it's almost like it's not really jurisdiction. It's like arbitrage between a boring market and a not boring market, right? Like you can offer your wares on to these people who are used to like, you know, the only time anything exciting happens in that market is when something goes bankrupt and you can like buy that shit for 10 cents on the dollar and then like, you know, make your money that way. Otherwise it's very, you know, I mean, you're just getting treasuries plus whatever spread you're getting on your shitty little bonds, right? I mean, the junk bond market is another thing, but I mean, that's you know, that's not investment grade, and there's like all sorts of volatility, but those companies are like going out of fucking business. Yeah, so you can, I know. So it's like, you, if you buy that shit, you might just lose all your goddamn money.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know, man. There was a Trump trade, basically, that I didn't fully understand what they meant by Trump trade, but I gather it had to do with Trump's economic policy likely leading to higher inflation.
Yeah, I mean, maybe higher inflation.
It was an inflationary trade, right?
It was an inflationary trade, but it was also like this new, in my mind, this is my opinion only, obviously. I'm not a political analyst, but, you know, what they did was they basically took the, I mean, it's, I mean, at the end of the day, it's all Republican pro-business shit, right?
Yeah, yeah. So
Rolled up a bunch of like
deregulation, lower taxes.
Yeah, lower taxes, more permissive, you know, listings and whatever. So, I mean, to me, it just seems like the Trump trade was take everything that had any doubt, had any kind of like downside related to government regulation or crackdowns or whatever.
In other words, just go risk on.
Just go risk on. Yeah, exactly. Just fucking. Just pour money in.
My risk off trades are getting dunked on. My gold and treasury game is poor.
Treasuries and gold.
Yeah. Treasuries and gold is poor. Though for me, I don't care, because like I got into gold at around 2000, and so I don't really care. And I still think it's a long term central bank play, and so I'm happy with that. I'm just going to hold it. And the treasuries, I kind of kept it on the short end, and they're like maturing now. So I actually think I'm going to go down the curve towards the 10-year, which are, if it gets to 5%, I'm going to start buying.
I mean, it started the year at like 4.2 or something, and now it's like 4.5, 6, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's moving fast. It moved like 10 basis points today. And it's shooting up. And then I think there's an eye towards 5. So at 5, I'm buying, because
because it can't go to 6. That's for goddamn sure.
I can't go to 6. Here's the thing that I mean, I could be really naive on this, but so the 30-year mortgage tracks the 10-year bond.
The 10-year plus the GSE spread or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
it tracks the 10-year because, you know, a 30-year mortgage, I think on average only lasts about 10 years.
Yeah, people refi and prepay.
People refi, they sell. So it tracks the 10 with a premium. You know, it moves with a relatively fixed offset, risk offset.
You know what I was listening to today was this podcast called Forward Guidance, and there was a Fed analyst who was a Treasury trader for a while, and he was trying
Andrew Wang guy? No.
No. This it's a Blockworks. They do crypto, but also like traditional macro podcast.
Andrew Wang's on that Blockworks macro. He was a Fed trader, but this has got a different guy.
You mean Fed guy 12?
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't him. It was somebody else.
Okay.
Anyways, this guy was saying like everyone was flipping out about the yield curve inversion and the uninversion and why why there wasn't a recession in the 2 years. Like people have been calling for this shit for 2 years.
What's going on? Yeah.
Like what's going on? So he dove in and he was like, okay, no, basically the upshot of his entire thesis is the Fed is now, instead of using actual market tools like their Fed funds rate and all that stuff, they're mainly just jawboning all of their shit out into the future and with their dot plots and forward guidance and all this stuff, right? And he said, and then what he did was he said, okay, instead of using the 10-year yield to calculate the yield curve inversion, what if you just use mortgage rates instead, which is a higher yield, right? He's like, what if the 10-year doesn't fucking really mean anything? It's all about mortgages. And in that little setup, he had a whole slide deck on it. But in that model, the yield curve never inverted. It just, you know, like the long end dipped, but it didn't it didn't really invert.
It didn't really, yeah. So they're like, saying the 10-year may be correlated to the mortgage bond rather than the other way. The mortgage bond is what's leading.
Right, because there's so much trading in the mortgages now. Yeah. Like the mortgage market is so big that that's the actual risk-free rate instead of the US 10-year.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You know, the 10-year is like a red herring. Like it's too low. Mm-hmm. To really mean anything. Like, who the fuck buys, other than you, I mean, who the fuck buys 10-year?
I don't buy long-term.
Yeah, so like the long-term risk-free rate, which, especially if you use mortgages.
By the way, I don't trust that totally, because there's still a much higher risk of default if there's a housing crash on the mortgage.
Yeah, but it's
funds.
All insured by the government, right?
Yeah, but you don't know at what, I don't, it's not clear, like, how much of that is going to be guaranteed.
Yeah, look, this is just this guy's thesis. I'm not an expert in any of this shit, so
I don't buy it, but I get the point. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he was just saying, like, what if the actual 10-year risk-free rate is higher than it really is?
It's the it's the mortgage. It's
Actual mortgage rate, not the yield curve.
Yeah.
Not the treasury curve.
Well, so my thinking on this is that I cannot see there to be a continued crash in treasuries without ultimately there being some form of, you know, there's going to be a Fed put. There's going to be an operation twist or a disguised QE or something, because you can't let more, like, here's the thing. Like, we are a real estate civilization. This ain't no business. Like, we are a civilization centered around residential mortgages.
Right.
I cannot see us continuing with the Fed wanting to lower rates and seeing mortgage rates not budging. Like, people want that shit to come down.
It is a problem, because people are currently locked into their homes.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
They're not selling unless they're being forced to sell through life circumstances or whatever, right?
Like, don't you think a big, like, in terms of the turn, like, there's a housing crisis, right? In quotes, in America. Yeah. I think a lot of the housing crisis is not necessarily that we lack new housing. It's that right now, like, retiring boomers and older, like, my parents live, this isn't the reason they haven't moved, but my parents occupy a house all to themselves that should rightly be,
yeah,
it should
young
be
family.
A family with kids in there. They don't
they're
need
empty,
that much space.
They're empty nesters squatting on prime real estate, basically.
They don't need to be in there. I don't know if the price on that house is enough to motivate that. At this point, they don't give a shit. But, like, I don't know if the price on that house is enough to motivate them to sell. Like, there's not enough buyers out there to bid the price up.
The problem is, if you sell your house, where the fuck are you going to live?
They would downsize.
Yeah, but that's still expensive, because they have a cheap mortgage, or it's paid off.
It's been paid off for decades.
Yeah, so they would either have to rent something.
Yeah.
You know, even at the downsized level, mm-hmm. it would still be fucking more expensive than their mortgage, right? To live a decent life.
If they have
a 1990s mortgage and they've refinanced it all the way through the last three decades. You know,
I think they finished paying it off in like
or zero. Yeah,
they finished paying it off well over.
Okay, so
20 years ago, I don't know.
So they're going from I don't know how the tax, at least in California, the tax basis is like also from when you bought the house.
Yeah, I know.
So if you're a boomer and you have a $0 mortgage,
yeah, no
and
taxes,
$2,000 in annual fucking property taxes.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do? You're not gonna move.
They're so fucking locked in.
Yeah, they're not going to move.
But I think the high more. So adding to this.
Oh, and get this. There's also a law in California where if you have a tax basis in a zip code, you can move like within. I don't know what the actual law is, but you can move within a certain area and maintain your fucking previous tax basis.
I see. That's helpful. I mean, that's unfair, but that's helpful in that it encourages.
It's unfair, right? Because even if you have, so basically you can snap up prime real estate, and this is usually used by people who are upsizing, not downsizing. So some fucking boomer that has a 1992 mortgage can buy a bigger house with all their capital gains and keep their tax basis. So that obviously takes housing away from.
Yeah, they really rigged the system for existing for boomers owners that got in early.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like a system of seniority, you know what I mean? Which is kind of crazy, yeah. But what I'm saying is that my thought here is that I don't think we can continue. Like, the real estate market is way too seized up, and sellers are captive, and buyers don't have financing.
They
don't have the money.
They just don't have the money
because the financing's dried up. So, like, I just cannot see the 10-year yields and stuff continuing to go up.
Okay, so what's your thesis on the mechanism of how they're going to fix this?
They're going to do like an Operation Twist type thing, or they're going to use balance.
So just buy it.
Yeah. That's what they did, right? They sold the short end, they bought the long end.
Yeah, yeah.
To try and renormalize to uninvert. They could just do straight up QE, like, you know what, like. If there's any economic pain out there, you know, they could start doing that shit, or they could really come out strong. Like, they could, their first thing that they could do is come out strong and just be like, we are cutting rates. Inflation is conquered.
Well, that's what they're doing already. I mean, they've been doing that for 2 months now.
Well, no, they did a 50 bips cut and then kind of didn't say much. But they've got to come out and say, because the long term rate is just an estimate of where the short term rate is going to be in the future, right? So,
yeah, I mean, it kind of converges on the 2 year, right?
Yeah. So they need to signal, like, hard, basically. Like, they need to hint, basically, like, the Fed put is back.
Right.
So go ahead and act as if the Fed put is there, because if it's not, we're going to have to step in and do some QE shit. We're gonna have to.
Okay, so they did another 25. There's one more. Wait, is there another meeting? Yeah,
I think there is another 25 bips coming.
What if they did 50? What if they just said, "Fuck it, we're doing 50.
See, I don't know, because that might spook the market, right? Like, they're not necessarily they're going to take that to mean that this is somehow good for long term bonds. So,
yeah, but what if the Fed says we're reacting to the fact that long term yields are rising by just cutting even fucking harder?
I mean, they may not have credibility.
Yeah,
because here's the thing: it's like the market's kind of like, okay, but inflation's going to come back. Then what are you going to do? We don't trust you.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then they're going to have to do direct balance sheet operations, and they're just gonna have to start intervening in the because they need those fucking rates to come down.
Yeah, they're just gonna start buying TLT or whatever.
yeah. So that's why I don't fully believe that they're gonna let rates blow out, because we can't go back to 10%. Dude, there's too much wealth tied up in housing. Like, in addition to all the fucking, like, if there's a recession, like, your blowout people's home values and stuff, like.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, like, valuations are kind of like, nobody cares about that shit right now. But also, if the discount rate goes too high, like, stocks will crash at some point.
That's the other thing. Because everyone, like, starts moving
over
to bond.
Stocks will crash. Yeah, for sure. So, I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see what happens. But
all I'm saying is, if it hits 5, I'm starting to move more cash into 10-year.
Okay, so you're
why?
A buyer.
Because, you know, I'll tell you why. Because there's a guy that I heard, because I was like, I stepped into some longer yield stuff and then immediately got, I mean, it's a pretty decent return. I got it like 4.6 but 20 years. And because that was the highest point on the curve. And I said, I was like, you know what? Here's my thinking, right? I'm not going to touch this cash I'm honestly not going to touch this cash for 20 years.
Yeah, you have other money.
Yeah, I have other money, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, this is mattress. And here's my problem is, like, I don't know what to do with my money. It's like a problem.
Yeah, but the problem with that is, okay, so the thesis is they're going to cap the rates in some form or fashion, somehow. But what if inflation goes fucking wild? What if they cap the rates?
You know what? Then I have the same problem as everyone else. right? But here, just hear me out on this.
Yeah, but you're positioned for you're not well positioned for that.
Why not?
Because if you have a 5% yield and inflation runs at 15% for a decade,
if the yield goes to
15%, I mean actual inflation, not CPI, like your health insurance, your fucking you know, all that stuff.
Okay, but I didn't put that much money in.
Okay, well, okay, all right.
Don't worry about that. I'm not saying this. Just hear me out. So here's my point is, so I was thinking about this exactly what you're saying, right? Because it is risky to put your money in the long end of the curve. You have a lot of interest rate risk. Like that cash is gone, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So my thinking is, and I was just kind of like doing a little video, you know, YouTube type research and reading some articles and stuff. I forgot where the guy came from. He was a fixed income guy. I think at a hedge fund. And he said, here's the thing is that when yields on the long end hit something like 4.5, 4.6.
Yeah.
He's like, the thing is like, that's actually just a decent return, right? Like I'm not too worried at some level, whether where rates are heading, because I'm comfortable with that yield in and of itself. He said, like, if, for example, we were talking about 3.2%, then I'm worried because I don't really like a 3.2% return, but I like a 4.6% return. And that's kind of how I feel about this. Like, if I can stock away something, like 20 years at 4.6, if you put in 10 bucks, you get out like 24 bucks in 20 years, right? It's kind of just like a time. It's like a time capsule. It's just a time capsule.
You get
that's all it is.
You can, I mean, that's literally what a bond is. Yeah.
Yeah. So my point, my feeling on that is like I don't. Yeah, you're right. Like we could just have runaway fucking inflation. I still have my time capsule. Whether it keeps up with inflation over 20 years, I'm kind of confident that we're not going to see 4.6% inflation on average for 20 years. I could lose that bet, but on the other hand, I didn't put everything in there.
Yeah, well, right, exactly. It's, you know, you're not going all in. I on the other hand, am pretty fucking worried about inflation, actually.
Yeah, why is that?
I just think it's, dude, like, I'm not, so there's two different things to consider here, right? There's the inflation rate, and then there's the rate at which your actual income goes up. If your income goes up along with inflation, then it's not really a problem because, you know, day to day, you just don't care. It doesn't really matter. But the money you locked away will obviously lose value over a decade or two, right? So I'm a little bit concerned. I mean, obviously, all this onshoring. So maybe we should start talking about the Trump economic policy angle on this, right? Like, obviously, if you reshore a bunch of shit onto American shores and tariff a bunch of foreign stuff, even if it's foreign FDI that's paying for all the onshore factories and production and all that and distribution, like, I don't know how that actually pans out in terms of price inflation, right? Especially if they're also pumping monetary inflation into this little mixture. So I don't know. Like the problem with the US political situation right now is there's so much like social shit wrapped up into the actual economic and financial stuff. Right? Like we only have two parties, so it's like, okay, you know, if people vote down the progressive social stuff, they're like it's a fucking package that you get the whatever, you know, I guess you could call it neo, you know, all this reshoring, anti-globalization, decoupling from China, all this, that entire
the
package,
new
you just
the sort of like new isolationist industrial policy. Yeah.
Like you're going to get that. It's obviously going to be inflationary because making shit in America is not cheap compared to Asia, obviously.
And the tariffs are, you know, but here's the thing, like that stuff isn't affected by interest rates.
Yeah, it's not. But
you can't raise interest rates to fight tariffs. You know what I mean?
No, you can't fight tariffs. I mean, look, okay, so my personal take on this matter is all of this extreme positioning that Trump and his team have put onto the table, it's all just negotiation leverage, right? So none of this stuff is going to go all the way.
Yeah, I feel the way. By the way, I feel the same way about all these neocons he's putting in. I think it's all negotiation leverage.
It's all negotiation leverage. I don't think. Look at what happened in his first administration. Right, he wanted to build a huge fucking wall. Okay, he got what 20% of the way there. I mean, that's politics. That's how you do things, right? You say, I'm going to do this crazy thing at 100 and in reality, it's going to come in at 20 to 30% or whatever, right? So
yeah.
All of these tariffs, all of this stuff is, he is going to take his team, and this is just my estimation, my opinion. He's going to take his team with his fucking, you know, new administration and go around the world and make deals with this kind of leverage to get something approximating a midway outcome in whatever direction that he wants to go in. Like, that has to be how it works. Like, he's not world emperor. Like, yeah, he can't just do all this shit like unilaterally.
I think people across the fucking political spectrum, from far fucking left, I'm talking like fringe militant left, to all the way to the, they still suffer from the idea that the US basically just like makes decisions. And yeah. It's like, no, we don't, dude. We're subject to huge constraints. Like,
yeah,
to say that I think offends people because they either think that you're demeaning the United States, or that if you're on the right or on the left, that you're downplaying the imperial, you know, the imperial, you know, impotence, potency of the United States, you know, like,
yeah, it's like that. It's like that meme from Trump's first, first term, God Emperor Trump. Like, it's, yeah, it's clearly not that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and you know, like, also, by the way, I wouldn't put it past Democrats to, you know, they have what, 2 years to the midterm, 4 years to the next presidential election. They're obvious. Look, unless they're just completely fucking retarded, they're going to reassess and then become the opposition to whatever thing he wants to do, right? Like, and plus, dude, by the way, Democrats, they also control a shitload of spending that already exists. So they can, you know, there's a lot of levers to pull in every direction, is what I'm saying. So I don't think, what's my actual point here? I don't think the extreme positions that were marketed during the election that just happened, I almost don't think any of them are really going to come to fruition at 100%. You know, like, even if you take...
You mean like mass deportation of...
Yeah, okay, I was just about to say, even if you take the mass deportations, what's the most likely outcome of that, right? Like, you already know that the number one thing they want to do first, probably through executive order, is just get rid of all the known criminals, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're going to do that. It's going to look ugly. There's going to be fucking SWAT teams and shit on the evening news. Okay, it's not like Nayib Bukele in El Salvador, where he has a country of like 2 million people.
Yeah.
And he can just literally just throw everyone in jail. Like, that obviously is not going to happen in the US.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen is his administration is going to get to a certain point, and then they're going to meet resistance, you know, whether it's probably around the midterm mark, and they're going to overreach a little bit. But, you know, dude, there's just no physical way of rounding up 10 million people or whatever. Like, you can't actually do that. It's too hard. It's too difficult.
Yeah, we don't have the manpower
we just don't have the capability to do that, right? So they're obviously going to go anyway. So the point is that if you just look at that on both the social and the economic outlook for his policies, that's I think that's what's going to happen. Things are going to be tempered to like the 25-30% mark. The US political system is set up to, you know, like, to limit, self-limit in that way. and then it's not going to be like super out of control. But yeah, and I mean, in the meantime, there's all sorts of stuff on the back end. Like,
so is this all to say you think the markets are getting ahead of themselves?
No, I don't think they're. No, I think it could get real crazy. I mean, I think I don't see any reason why the S&P during the next year or two can't get to like, I mean, right now it's 6,000. I think it could get to like 7,000 or 8,000. Just because there's no like limiting, there's no like, it's not like people have a lack of money, like especially with all these passive flows that are coming in, like every time you get a paycheck, it just buys the market. So unless there's some crazy thing that happens that, you know, shuts down the buying power of all this stuff, I don't think there's any like.
Yeah, I mean, there's no natural limit to.
There's no natural limit to.
Just like with Bitcoin, there's no natural limit. It's.
Well, I would like to think that.
Yeah.
In my own mind.
I mean, I don't think there's limitation on price. I think the limitation's always been on liquidity. The issue is the exit liquidity. It's not the price. The price just makes it harder to buy in. So.
Well, the limitation is on the supply, like the people willing to sell. Yeah. And then cross that with the liquidity on the buy side, right?
So yeah, the problem is when the buy side when there's no buyers left. That's the real problem. But you're saying
when there's no buyers left, it just drops like a fucking rock.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm not going. I'm proud of Bitcoin and stuff. I'm not touching it because I don't buy stuff I don't understand. I just don't understand Bitcoin. It's just too dark a market. Like if I bought any, it would be a tiny amount just for fun. But I don't find it that fun. Generally I would say, okay, buy the dip. And the only question is, do you sell or hold the rip? But don't buy the rip. There's no way I'm buying this.
Well, definitely don't buy the rip.
Yeah. There's no way I'm fucking buying this rip.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but that's the temptation, man. It's all the people who buy the rip who are making everyone rich.
Yeah, it's all FOMO. You know? I mean, it's all FOMO, and yeah. I mean, but
Let me explain. Like, I really don't like Bitcoin culture because of this. Because, like, you get it. You're an older, smarter guy. You get it. But like, there's a lot of dumb kids out there who don't understand.
Well, like, I would posit that the dumb kids out there are. They think Bitcoin is for boomers, man. Like they're out there doing all sorts of wacky shit in crypto land.
Okay. Right? Well, these, like, whoever it is, it doesn't matter, but like, I'm just saying like, there's no way this shit rips without dumb people. You know what
I mean?
Well,
yeah, of course. Well, so, okay. So here's the current, like, narrative consensus, whatever you want to call it, is the dumbness of buying the rip is migrating from retail into quote unquote smart money, whether that's rich people, high net worth, or institutions, or even, I mean, people are like talking about nation states buying Bitcoin, and that's the narrative. That's the, you know,
I think that's like a load of shit, but yeah, I think that's a story being told to
I'm just telling you that's what the narrative is.
No, I know. Right? I've heard that.
So that the stupidity is like migrating up the chain, basically. The value chain, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't make it.
Well, let me ask you this, man.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. What would you think? What would be your thought process if, okay, Bitcoin's at what? 90K, 88 to 90K?
Yeah.
What if all of a sudden it just gaps, or not gaps, but fucking moons to like 150?
Yeah.
What would you think that? I'm not asking if you would buy or sell. I'm just saying.
I would think that's even more reason for me to stay away. I would say that becomes a very dangerous situation.
Okay, what would happen if it like does something absolutely absurd, like goes to 500 grand or something?
Not touching it.
Okay. Okay.
Not touching it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. This is all hypothetical. I don't think
you know why? Because I just look. Basically, here's my, like, I think this is actually a pretty deep topic. Like, yeah, it is. Like, the questions you're asking me to me are actually very deep. Like, it goes into the core of, like, how people think, you know?
It's what money is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's really funny. Like, it turns out that the prediction markets on the election were way more accurate than the polling. And I don't know how true this is, but someone said the major move in the offshore market, poly market, you know, when it had Trump at like 60 points or something. The reason for that move was because there was basically like a whale.
A French guy.
French guy. And they said, you know why he made such a big bet? Because he saw there was the poly market was tracking the polls. People, most of the dumb money was coming in at the and saying that the polls were sort of like par, right?
Yeah, they were converging on poll data.
Yeah. So at that point, this prediction market's worth nothing because everyone's just betting betting the poll.
It's just the same as fucking Rasmussen or whatever.
Yeah. But then this guy, this whale, looked at some of the polling and said, you get vastly different results if you change the question. If the question is, who are you voting for, 50-50. If the question is, okay, but who are your neighbors voting for?
Yeah.
Then it started blowing out for Trump. And he was like,
what's your read on the situation? Not your actual desire to, exactly.
Yeah, I don't care about what you're doing. Just tell me what you think is going on around
you. What do you see? What do you see is going on here?
Yeah. And so he said, based on that, or the whale thought, based on that, along with backtesting that question, that was a much more accurate poll. And then so he just fucking took the money off the table. And I think he earned himself something like $35 million.
Yeah, I think from what I read, he doubled his $30 million bet, $30 to $35 million bet.
Yeah. So, Aussie move.
If it was, which makes sense, right? Because if it was hovering at 50-50 forever, that means you fucking double your money when it closes at 100%, right?
Yeah. Like,
so he just kept buying. And,
yeah. He took 50-50 money at much better odds than that. He got a really good deal.
Yeah. I think.
But to your point, it's like, yeah, I mean, this guy, you know, unlike a lot of people who were throwing 10 bucks in, 20 bucks in, maybe 100 bucks, ooh, maybe 1,000 bucks. This guy was like, no, fuck it. I'm going to make life-changing money. But when a guy does that, he's got to go deep. He's got to really dig into what's going on. And he out analyzed the data over these professional pollsters because he had his real money on the line. And that shows you like just how sort of motivating a factor like having money is, you know, like I don't know how you feel, but like, honestly, dude, I can actually feel my political views change based on like where my money is.
Well, yeah, obviously. I mean, that's half of politics, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's money and like your social life. So, you know, lack of a better word, social life, right?
Yeah.
Your social mores. That's all.
No. I mean, specifically, like my politics will change because I want my particular investments to pump, and so, you know, I will be like, my view of whether CPI is an accurate read of inflation will be affected by my positioning. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like that's very unavoidable.
Well, it's the human condition.
So yeah,
in a lot of ways,
dude, you know why? Because that money ain't money, man. That's your life. It's time. Like that, it took time to make that money. And that's why, like, it's not just about greed. It's also like recognizing that that is a reflection of hours of your life, days, years of your life that you gave to someone else.
Well, it's amplified because you don't actually know how long you're going to live.
Yeah.
Right. That's the big overriding factor is you have no fucking clue how long you're going to live. So it's going to be
on the long end. I mean, you could live for a fucking long time. And that's also
exactly. Problem. So the discount rate is just like infinite, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It's undefined or infinite, whichever one works better for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is I'm curious to see how the mainstream media punches back at prediction markets, because you know they're going to come up. They're going to spin some fucking yarn. This is what they do with everything they don't like.
Well, why don't they just get in the business?
They're not that, dude, because no software company wants to work for, or no software developer wants to work for fucking like New York Times or Washington Post.
Just acquire the company.
They don't. Okay.
Just
yeah.
sort of, I mean, just maybe, sort of like how, just, no, just sort of, no, just sort of like how NFL embraced sports betting is like, let's not yeah. fight it. Let's just fucking
yeah,
get
but
in the business.
That's all like, that's not left wing stuff, right? Like these left wing publications are just anti, like, it just goes against their whole.
That's only because they got, but once they lost, like, you know, CNN's like axing everyone now.
I heard that.
Like firing everyone. They're retooled. They're businesses. They're businesses.
Yeah. Could be. Maybe that'll happen. Maybe that'll happen for sure.
I mean, NFL probably wanted to, for a long time, was probably resistant to sports gambling because they were resistant to cheapening the sport. But now they're like, yeah, fuck it, DraftKings. You know, like,
yeah.
They're like, we're going to provide you with fucking odd. You know, data, everything's going to be fucking odds all the time, man. You get the NFL pass on your mobile, there's buttons. Yeah. There's like, it proposes bets to you. Like, yeah. You want to parlay this, you know? And I'm like, oh my God, they don't give a fuck, man. They're all about business. So,
yeah, I mean, maybe that might be the pivot that the traditional, you know, media needs. But,
dude, the other day I was on the subway and I was passing through West 4th. And they have these like really these tall video billboards now on the platform, and it was for whatever that what's the betting market with like Kalshi. Yeah. It was a Kalshi ad, and they just listed like all these races,
all the live bets.
Live bets. And dude, I wanted to take a picture of it so bad. I whipped out my phone because I was like, this is so dystopian.
Well, it's the, I mean, this is
like sci-fi, you know, dystopia in a cool way.
Yeah. Well, you know, the interesting thing is Polymarket is actually run on a blockchain. So it's a quote unquote crypto project. And this is one reason why I don't think the left wing sort of corporate establishment will really move quickly to either integrate or purchase or whatever, this kind of stuff. Because it's so against like all of their, like, dude, the entire Biden administration was so fucking anti-crypto. It was absurd, like completely absurd. And that's just like baked into their sort of like worldview now. So I don't know how fast they'll be able to pivot into the marketification of everything based on fucking blockchains.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, like they're basically just quantifying every single possible thing that could happen in the world.
Here's the thing is like
instead of like crafting the narrative the way that they want, you know what I mean? Because that's sort of like the bread and butter for the traditional media, is they craft the narrative instead of letting people just fucking bet on it.
Yeah, I get it. But here, okay. But going back, because you had asked this, you were raising this point that like sort of is. Triggering this thought in me, and the same thought was triggered when I saw that Kalshi video billboard.
Yeah,
is it's not. Look, it's not that I'm opposed to it. Like, I think it should be regulated, and I mean, maybe it should. It's just I don't care about that. Right? It's like maybe it should be regulated. I don't know. Okay. But the thought that I have now, and I think it has a lot to do with my age, is like you said, like I now have like a count, like I'm at the clearly at like the halfway point, right? If I'm lucky, if I'm not, I'm past it, right? Well, past it.
You live in New York, you could get hit by a fucking bus tomorrow,
right? But in a weird way, like that actually makes your life a lot easier. Because I've found that I have flipped into a different mode of thinking where all I care about is just like, do I have enough? Like, is it enough to, you know what I mean? I really don't care. Like, you know, like the FOMO.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, right. Like, I don't have FOMO on stuff. Like, okay, I remember now. You started asking me how would I react if I watch Bitcoin go crazy and moon to like 500,000. And I honestly don't give a shit because Bitcoin going to 500,000 makes no difference to me. It just doesn't affect my plans.
But what if, let me twist that question around a little bit. What if the reason it's going that high is because there's crazy inflation, even crazier than it is now for basically everything on Earth?
Yeah.
Because the central banks are going crazy. Like, that's the thesis, right? That's the whole Bitcoin.
Yeah. Look, here's the thing. If that's the case, like, I don't think you having a Bitcoin ETF in your portfolio is going to matter. Because
I mean, not like, but hold on, not like 1,000% inflation, but like 20% sustained inflation.
That's pretty bad.
For a while.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, it is. I mean, for certain things, that's what it's been.
Yeah, but Bitcoin, I would rather hold gold in that case.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. I'd rather hold gold. I think that's valid.
Yeah.
Excuse me, valid.
Because I still think that Bitcoin is not nearly as secure, and you know, it's like it's mimicking physical. A physical commodity through cryptography, but it's not physical, and it's I don't trust that it's fully secure. I think the government has backdoor keys, and like I said, I think it's a CIA project is the most likely.
Yeah, I mean, these are all honestly, these are all valid concerns to me. These are all very fucking valid concerns.
But more than that, right? Look, I mean, I get that point, but like more than that, it's also just that like, I'm starting to see the hell of like relative value, you know, like
elaborate on that.
What's that?
Elaborate on that.
I'm starting to see the sort of like endless hall of mirrors that one gets lost in when the only thing that we understand is market price and relative value. Because like we're not relative beings, like we have absolute.
Right. You have anchor values that you value above everything.
Yes, exactly. Right. There are things that do not change in terms of they don't have a market price, like your life, right? Like time,
right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like an hour is an hour and it never changes. A day is a day.
Like a nice like if you go to a cookout with your friends. Like
yes. Yes.
Like you can't put a fucking dollar amount on that, right?
And it doesn't it's not even that. It's just that it just doesn't fluctuate. It just is what it is, and it's not the value of it is not determined by price. It just it's just the thing, you know. And as I get older, like really wealthy people say this all the time too. They're like it just doesn't like once you're really wealthy, like it stops mattering. Like the thing, it's the things that actually that just regular people enjoy that they somehow learn to enjoy again, you know?
Yeah. Right. Like they go on to the other side of the fucking wealth pill or whatever.
Yeah. In a way, like they, you know, they kind of, exactly. They go around. And so I think that, the hell I think truly is sort of like a middle-class mind where, they're caught up. They suffer deeply from FOMO because like, honestly, I think part of it, like a lot of it has to do with the failure of them to get at, like to get out of the hell of relative value. And they're just always putting everything they own in terms of other things. They're always just trading everything they have in their mind for something else. And they always feel like they got stuck because anytime some other stock they didn't own moons, they oh fuck that it ah you know why didn't I put it in that, you know? Or like if, and I think that was your question about Bitcoin, like you see, like you're asking me, like you seem so like sort of, you know, nonplussed by Bitcoin's move up, you know, but how would you feel if it moved up 5-10x from where it is now? And I'm like, I really think honestly I don't have.
Right. Well, to be fair though, it's that's because you also own gold.
It's okay, but I want to explain. No, but here's the thing.
If Bitcoin does that, gold, your investments that you have now would also go up a lot.
No. I don't agree because I don't think.
Okay.
I don't believe that Bitcoin is any sort of inflation hedge. I don't think anyone knows what Bitcoin is. That's the thing. I think there's
it's everything and nothing.
Yeah. The thing about Bitcoin that I don't like, it is, to me, the distillation. It's the purest expression of relative value we know. It absolutely cannot and refuses to be anchored to anything real. We've tried to connect it with electricity cost and we expected there to be a big move at the halving, and there wasn't.
Well, the ETFs did much more for it to.
Yeah, or maybe it's just has nothing to do with the price of electricity. You know,
I don't think it does.
Yeah. And so I think a lot of people have been analysts have been trying to find some deeper meaning to the value of Bitcoin, and I just don't think it exists. I think Bitcoin is pure. It's like, have you ever heard of this concept of like hyper reality? I think that's the term.
I've heard of it, but I don't know. I can't put my finger on
it. It's like some esoteric French shit from this guy named like Baudrillard about how in the modern world, like we're moving into a symbolic order that's no longer tied to any absolute. Like everything is defined in relative terms to something else. Like, but he's talking about words and conceptions.
Yeah, this is like all of the like hyper, not hyper, but like the super liberal academic redefinition of like a bunch of shit, right?
Yeah, it's the postmodern shit.
Postmodern, that's the word I'm looking for.
But yeah. I think this had nothing to do with like the woke shit. This was really like just sort of like people kind of somewhat going insane because they were thinking too much.
Sounds like French philosophy.
Yeah, sounds like French philosophy. But it was a good idea in the sense that he was basically saying that like modern society as best demonstrated by like America in the 90s, like the pop culture that, you know, he as a stodgy French person was witnessing.
The MTV era.
Yeah. What he was witnessing was a culture that was entering into like a hyper real phase where it no longer was connected to any like absolute real world sense of concepts.
Well,
entirely within like just every concept it was like a dictionary. Like every concept was just meant something only in relation to some other concept.
Yeah, I mean, this is the same. I mean, you could distill like the meme coin phenomenon down into just that, basically. Right?
I think that's Bitcoin.
People are trading fucking meme coins. Based on nothing.
Based on nothing. I think Bitcoin trades on nothing. Other than just it's just pure.
Okay, well then let me ask you this.
Speculation.
Apart from the price appreciation and price action.
Yeah.
Trump, the incoming administration is talking about either establishing a Bitcoin reserve or implementing a policy where they just transfer all the Bitcoins that they will ever seize through DOJ and you know, all the DEA and all these other agencies, and then instituting a policy where they will just never sell it. What are your thoughts as a Bitcoin not skeptic? I don't think you're skeptical
just
of
Bitcoin
it.
Bitcoin avoidant.
Yeah. Like what would your thoughts be on if the government actually embraced it in some kind of official capacity? Who knows what that is.
Should I answer that question in the bonus phase of this, the bonus portion of this pod?
Let's do that. Let's leave them hanging.
All right. If you want to hear the answer to that exciting question, we'll continue this on the part two on the bonus feed. If you want to support and get access to the bonus pods, go to patreon.com/planningmatters.